WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Since her release from Alderson Federal Prison on March 4th, Martha Stewart's lifestyle empire has continued to grow. She has two new TV shows, is launching a satellite radio channel, and has a new licensing deal that will put her brand on a subdivision of homes in North Carolina to be called KB Home Twin Lakes, homes created with Martha Stewart. The occasion for our interview was her new book, called The Martha Stewart Rules, 10 Essentials for Achieving Success as You Start, Build, or Manage a Business. Martha Stewart, welcome to Fresh Air. This will sound like a really silly question, but with all the projects that you have to deal with and all of the decisions you have to make, does prison seem relatively relaxing by comparison looking back?
I'm really over prison. I can think about it privately, but to talk about it day in and day out is more tiresome than I wish. I am on with my life. I'm free. I am working. I am thriving. I am helping revitalize our company. I am writing books again, writing my columns again, and I feel really, really good. I'm glad to be home, and I am glad to be free.
I know you're over prison, but I'd still like to ask you a couple of questions about it. Would you describe a little bit about what the facility was like, what your surroundings were like?
I was in what probably can be described as the as pleasant as possible for a federal detention facility, and it was not as bad as anyone could imagine. It was not unsafe. I did not feel in danger.
You know, there were so many jokes that were made about how Martha Stewart's going to redecorate her jail cell and everything. Did you do anything to make your surroundings more pleasant?
Terry, there are no materials to work with in a place like Alderson. You are not allowed to receive paper. Decorative paper. You're not allowed to receive anything made out of fabric. You're not really allowed to receive anything other than letters and a certain number of photographs on a daily basis and a certain number of books. So if one could decorate one's room with five books and some writing paper and some colored pens that you could buy at the commissary, then you could do some decorating. But it was very impossible to do anything like that. And I didn't want to spend my time doing that. I read a lot. I had a fantastic opportunity to do a lot of reading, a lot of thinking.
What'd you read?
Oh, I read many books. I read Durr's Encyclopedia of Trees because I was really interested in learning a lot about deciduous and evergreen trees. So I had the encyclopedia sent down to me, D-I-R-R. And it was fantastic. I mean, when do you get a chance to read an encyclopedia of trees? I've used it as a reference work, but I actually got to know the shapes of trees. I'm now very much better at identifying all kinds of trees. I also did that for shrubs. Let me see. I read Bob Dylan's autobiography, which was wonderful. I read many novels that I wouldn't have had time to read. Well, and, you know, I read and read and read and read.
And was it clean inside?
Cleanliness is one of the chores, one of the requirements.
So you mean you had to clean? Is that what you're saying?
We had no housekeepers, Terry. We are the housekeepers, Terry.
Is it in spite of all of your domestic understanding, is this a kind of cleaning you were not used to?
See, you don't know me very well. I'm an inveterate cleaner. One of my favorite things to do is vacuum, dust, wash, polish, scrub, clean. So I was really good at it.
Now, your new book is Tips for Starting a Business, which leads me to the basic paradox that some people think your success represents. You're an incredibly powerful and wealthy businesswoman. And in that sense, you represent the achievements women have been able to make since the women's movement. But your success is built on speaking to women's traditional domestic roles, cooking, decorating, you know, arts and crafts. And it's exactly the type of stuff that a lot of powerful women who have succeeded in business don't even have time for. Have you thought a lot about that contradiction?
Yeah, and it is a paradox, and it is worrisome to some people. What I've tried to do and what our company tries to do, and I think our readers and our viewers and our customers really do understand that the domestic arts are just that. They are not drudgery. They are not something to be maligned. They are not something to be to look down upon. The domestic arts should be celebrated. And I discovered this a long time ago. My mother celebrated the domestic arts. She treated sewing our clothes as an art form, as something, as an achievement. She was a teacher. She taught sixth grade her entire life. After she retired from the Nutley Public School, she then went on to substitute teach up in Weston, Connecticut. And she still is teaching children at 91 years of age. She still sews for my friends. She has kept her hobbies, and she treated sewing. She treated that as a hobby, not as a chore. And if you have six kids to sew clothes for, it could be considered a chore, a drudgery, but not for my mother. And I think that that really, her attitude towards homekeeping really caused me to think a lot about why I grew up liking what other people considered chores.
Early in your career, you were doing some modeling for products like Breck, Tarryton cigarettes, Lifebuoy soap, Clairol shampoo. What kind of ads were they? Were they print ads, TV ads?
Both. I did during high school. I started in high school, I think, when I was about 13 years old, traveling to New York on Saturdays and doing live modeling at a store called Bonwit Teller. And then I joined a formal agency, and I was in Mademoiselle magazine and Glamour magazine, and I did a lot of TV commercials. Those were very lucrative, and they really did pay for college.
Would I remember any of those commercials?
Well, we've shown a Lifebuoy soap commercial recently on my show, and it's hysterical because there I am. I think I was 15 years old. I'm playing a married woman jumping off a ladder. And it was about antiperspirant soap. And the Tarryton was the I'd Rather Fight Than Switch. Remember those?
Sure do. Yeah, with the black eye.
I had a black eye. It was very elegant, and I practiced smoking. I never smoked a day in my life, and I practiced for 2 weeks. My agent said, you better just learn how to inhale. At that time, I think I was 19 and married. So I practiced, and then they just made me hold the cigarette. I never even had to smoke on air, on tape.
So that modeling must be a good experience for what you had to do when you started.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Who knew?
Cause,
right, because you've ended up on the cover of so many of your own publications.
Oh, my magazines and others, and whoever would have guessed.
Right.
And but it gave me a certain self-confidence that a lot of young women lack. It made me certainly know how to stand in front of a camera and change my pose every 3 seconds as they, you know, click the shutter. And it was very, very good experience.
In your book, you recommend that people starting their business might consider becoming the face of their brand. And as you pointed out, it worked for Ralph Lauren, for Donna Karan, for Sean Combs, for Oprah, and of course, for you. At what point in your business life did you realize that you wanted your brand to be you? You wanted to be the face and the name of it?
Well, I think that was made very clear to me when I presented a prototype to Cy Newhouse of Condé Nast Magazines. Cy is the owner of Condé Nast. He's a wonderful, wonderful entrepreneurial genius in the media world. And he looked at my magazine, the prototype that I had created, and it was called Martha Stewart Living. And he said, Martha, I love the prototype. He actually had funded it. I love what's inside. But if you look at our magazines, it's Condé Nast Vogue. It's Condé Nast Traveler. I can't put Martha Stewart Living. It has to be Condé Nast Living. And I thought at that moment, well, if Cy Newhouse has Condé Nast, and that is his, then why can't I have Martha Stewart living? And I think that that's when it happened to me, that I realized that ownership might actually be wonderful. Ownership, having my name on a cover of a magazine might show my readers that I am really involved.
What's the downside of having the brand be you?
Well, there wasn't any apparent downside until I had a legal problem.
Right, and the brand was in prison for a while.
and the brand, which should not in any, I mean, the brand and the company had nothing to do with my problem, but I had something to do with my problem, and this person who was having a problem had the same name as the brand and the same face. And that's when the oddity happens. I mean, you know, you can't really even anticipate that it would happen to anybody else, but, you know, not to mention any names, there are other people who are the faces and the names of their brands, and it could happen conceivably to them, and I hope it never does because it's horrible.
My guest is Martha Stewart. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Martha Stewart, and her new book is called The Martha Rules, 10 Essentials for Achieving Success as You Start, Build, or Manage a Business. Because you're such a successful, powerful, and wealthy business and media figure, you're both an icon and a figure of mockery. By figure of mockery, I mean you're caricatured on Saturday Night Live. There's all kinds of like internet Martha Stewart parodies. There's Martha Stewart book parodies. The late night talk show hosts make jokes about Martha Stewart. What does it do to your ego to be both, you know, to be the icon and the figure of fun?
Well, lately I've been spending a lot of time sort of scratching my head wondering what the heck is really going on here. And I think that the last 5 months has really helped me sort of focus on some of the problems inherent in being both parodied and admired. What we do at our company, and I hope that people are listening and understand now, what we do is teach. What we do is provide really good information. The people who work with me and I are really proud of what we do. I mean, I don't make fun of my teachers. I was brought up to respect my teachers and to like my teachers. And if the teacher said, Martha, you're doing that wrong, and I would go home and complain, my parents would say, Martha, the teacher's right. And I would go back and say, okay, teacher, you're right. I'm wrong. Let's get on with the project. Really, that's how I was brought up. And when my daughter complained about her teachers, I said the same thing to her. And she'd get mad at me. I mean, she would get mad at me. But I would support what the teacher was doing. So to constantly parody and make fun of teaching is kind of strange to me.
I want to read you something that our critic at large, John Powers, wrote in his book, Sore Winners. He has a short chapter about you, and some of it focuses on some of the paradoxes in your life and career. He also writes, her landmark deal with Kmart was a turning point in popularizing modern American design culture. She helped liberate millions from the tyranny of truly ill-conceived goods, low thread count towels, day-glow-colored ceramics that had been one of the most depressing features of not having much money. Her way of changing mass taste made her a far more culturally significant figure than, say, Eminem, Martin Scorsese, any dozen novelists you might choose to name. What do you think?
I think he understands what I'm trying to do, and I thank him very much. I think that I was the first, if you call me a designer or a lifestyle expert, to take the mass market and improve it.
What's your legal status now? You're appealing, yes?
We are appealing. We have not heard from the court, and I'm just waiting. It's a very, very difficult thing to think about, and I think that I had an unfair trial, and I certainly would like to win my appeal. It would solve a lot of problems, but we have to wait and see.
But you've already served your time, right?
oh, well, I did. I made the decision to get over the really big obstacle, because without having gone to prison, I would be appealing and still waiting. That would have been an untenable situation to be in as a business person. Martha Stewart Living would not have two television shows on the air. We would not probably have the advertiser growth that we've had in the last 7 or 8 months. We would probably be suffering and suffering and suffering.
Do you know anybody else who's gone to prison before an appeal, who's voluntarily served the sentence before an appeal?
You know, I do not know, but I'm not an expert in that. It was a decision that I made, knowing that it would solve a problem. It was a business decision. It was one of those calculated risks that I talk about in one of my chapters in my new book. And taking a calculated risk like that actually has solved a major problem, several major problems.
Well, Martha Stewart, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks.
Martha Stewart's new book is called The Martha Stewart Rules.